Okie dokie. What's up, y'all? We are live right now. What is going on? Stephen Ignoramus here. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant, episode number 31, 2 o'clock p.m., July 12th, 2019. So please, you could be with us. Call Me Ignorant is a live conversation show, whether with an interesting content creator, an expert in a field, a controversial figure, or with a fellow human being trying to spread a message. Call Me Ignorant will try to solve the problems of the world, conversationally speaking. We are streaming live right now to YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, Mixer, DLive, and Picarto. If you can't catch the show live, you can find it after the fact on the above-mentioned platforms, also on BitChute and FreedomScoop.com. Call Me Ignorant is also available in podcast format on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean. You can find me on Twitter at IgnoramusSteve or send me an email at StephenIgnoramus@gmail.com. Topic ideas, questions, and potential guests for the show are much appreciated. With me on the program today is Fritz, creator and host of Fritzcast, a libertarian-based podcast where he explores current events and important issues through the lens of liberty. I instantly became a fan of his show after I heard it, and I'm really pumped to talk to him today about creating his show, his worldview, and how to make sense of this crazy time period we are living in. You can find links to his show down below in the show description, along with his social media. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Fritz. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. And like we were just talking about a few moments ago, it's the first time I'm doing anything live, so everybody that's out there watching, anything can happen.
Yeah, that's right. So when I reached out to you, kind of messaged me back on Twitter saying that you don't really pre-script much of your show. So what is your kind of your workflow like? Do you prepare a lot? Do you just go off the cuff? Do you edit a lot? What's creating your podcast like?
I think it depends on what's going on during the week and what I want to try to figure out what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. There's times where I do sit down and I like write out a big page of show notes. And I go off of that. There's sometimes where I have written monologues. It's not a lot, but it depending on the subject and what's going on, sometimes I feel like I need to do that. And then mm-hmm. other times I feel like, you know, it's just better to go off of, hey, this happened and these are my thoughts on it. So
cool. And so do you have do you plan the topics out, you know, a couple weeks in advance, or is it often like something will happen in the news and you're like, okay, that's my topic for the week and we're doing this?
I used to do it when something happened, like just in the week, if something big happened, I would say that's going to be what it's centered around and I would do it. And then like 3 weeks later, I would realize that everything I just talked about was bullshit, like, because all the facts came out, all the details came out on it. And I guess that's like over the course of my show, I started it back in 2015. Probably by 2016, 2017, I was like, I'm going to try to back away from doing that because I would do a take and then I'd listen to that episode like a month later or maybe 2 months later. And I'd be like, wow, I was really wrong because everything they said about it was wrong.
Do you ever like, when that happened, do you ever like, I don't know, delete anything or correct it in a later podcast or put out a tweet or anything like retract? And that's, you know, I do most of my stuff live. So I don't know how to really handle that other than to say you're wrong. But do you address that later?
Yeah. I'll correct it. I never delete it because, you know, and that's with Twitter and social media and how quick you can go off the cuff on this crap. Like I stopped doing the hot take thing. If you want to do hot takes, it's fine. You know, sometimes they're hilarious and all that. But then again, like a week later, you figure out, oh, crap, I was totally wrong on that. And you can either delete it, but somebody probably screenshotted it and is ready to, you know, I got you. It's right here. You're an idiot. But, you know, I try to if it's new information, I'll correct it. And I'll say, hey, look, see, this is how we were all wrong and why we shouldn't do what I just did.
Yeah, nice. I mean, that's totally the world we live in. And, you know, I didn't really dabble in social media or anything I'm 31 now. I didn't really even think about it till I was 28 or so. And I think that's a big part of the process is just accepting that's the world we live in. And it's like, all right, people are going to say stuff. People are going to, and what are you going to do other than keep creating or like live in fear? I don't know.
It's like all of Twitter is this hot take land. And if you're not doing the hot takes, like nobody cares. But for me, I'm like, all right, I'm not going to drop the hot takes. I'm going to try to engage people in conversation. It's really hard to do in 280 characters, right, but you try to anyway. And then halfway through it, you just kind of like quit. You're like, all right, I'm not going to talk to anybody for the rest of the day.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I was going to kind of lead off with asking you about your background and stuff, but we'll get to that later because I, you know, one of the episodes that I liked of yours is your episode called 280 Characters. I'm trying to find it right now. And you basically talked about Twitter interaction. And what is your, like, do you argue with people and try to debate people a lot on Twitter?
I don't try to engage it because there's so many different trolls. Like halfway through talking to somebody, you might figure out, oh crap, he's a parody account. And you stop and you're like, you feel kind of idiotic because you spent 15, 20 minutes engaging with this and you figured out it's all bullshit. So, you know, I have at times gotten into conversations with people when I've had good experiences. Those are like few and far between. Those come out like, that's tweet one out of 50, you know?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the things I wonder about because, you know, I've talked with friends and like family and stuff like that about, you know, whether debating on Twitter is a good thing. But I actually have not ever seen someone on Twitter be like, okay, you convinced me. Like
no, some, never.
Yeah.
Never happens. You double down. Yeah. You either double down or, you know, I even have my own echo chamber, kind of. Everybody right. has like Everyone that does. Echo chamber thing. And so you either double down and you get all your friends to jump on this one dude and go, ha ha, idiot. Or they do it to you.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's why I'm a big fan of just walking away. Like, that seems like the best thing to do is that, you know, if someone does convince me, I will admit it for sure. But usually when I've been convinced by something on Twitter, it's been they've linked a link to something longer, like longer form, a podcast, a video.
Yeah.
And that's how I've shaped a lot of my worldview is consuming long form media for a decade. And but just the do you know how long ago it was that they increased it to 280? It used to be 140.
It was like 2 years ago.
2 years.
I remember because for me, like when they were coming up with it, I was like, well, this is a dumb idea. Twitter's about this stupid, like having two lines.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. You're just supposed to tweet in two lines and then get over it. You know, if you're going longer, people were doing threads then too, but they do it now. Like, you'll just see somebody doing a thread and like they go 50 tweets deep and you're just like, you know, when do you stop and write a blog on it rather than just do it on Twitter?
Yeah. Do you know, who Seth Abramson is?
I'm somewhat familiar with the name.
Yeah. So. After the Mueller report was released, he put out, I think, a 497 thread tweet.
God, why? Stop.
So epic, man.
Just do this or blog it or something, but 490 tweets, really?
Yeah, it was like an all-day update thing, and I was at work at the time, and I was just like, every like hour or so, I would check it, it'd be an extra 20 to 30 tweets, and it went from, I think, 8 in the morning till like 1 in the morning. It was just all...
God, he just sat there on his phone tweeting that whole time.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, so where are you from, man?
Delaware.
You're from Delaware, okay. And have you lived there your whole life? You bounce around at all, or...
Born and raised here.
Wow.
Pretty much like I live 15 minutes away from the house I grew up in.
Oh, wow. That's cool. So were you raised, you know, talking about philosophy, history, things like that? Or did you get into it at like a later age or what?
That's a big thing. My family's kind of quirky.
Okay.
like I'm the kind of guy that was raised on show tunes, musicals, taken to plays, you know, stuff like that. Very religious family too.
Mm.
So a lot of that did come into play. Religion, philosophy kind of bled into each other. American history, I got all of my appreciation and love for American history from my family. Growing up here, like there's so many like battlefields around here.
Right.
Like Philadelphia is right up the road. It's 40 minutes away. You can go see the Liberty Bell. You can see Independence Hall. You can see all that. You can go see Gettysburg. It's probably like an hour and a half away from here. Manassas down in Maryland. And that's when I was a kid, my mom took us all traveling. Like every summer was a trip to somewhere, whether it was here, whether it was across the West Coast, anywhere.
Cool, man. Yeah. So like, I don't know, one of, you know, just back to Twitter real fast. One of the things that was cool is I looked at your Twitter bio and I never know when, you know, people in their Twitter bio do everything from extremely tongue in cheek to parody to like just straight up what they are. But like it says stand up philosopher in your Twitter bio. Is that tongue in cheek? Is that real? What is that?
I stole that from Mel Brooks' History of the World Part 1.
Okay.
I forget the character's name, but he's a comedian in ancient Rome and he calls himself a stand-up philosopher.
Cool.
So,
so like one of the questions I ask to a lot of my guests is, you know, like how important talking about politics and stuff were growing up. So like you said, your mom took you on trips to see history and stuff like that. But was it, what is it a regular conversational thing from an early age for you guys?
Yeah, for me, I mean, especially like American history.
Yeah.
And it kind of tied in with religion too.
Okay. Gotcha.
Cause I grew up Mormon LDS.
I was going to ask you about that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And we can get to that. We can get more in depth of that later if you want. But Mormonism and LDS teaches a deep appreciation of American history too, because without America being founded, like there would never be a Mormon religion. Just would not have been possible in the world at the time. So a lot of that got instilled in me very, very young.
Okay, gotcha. So yeah, let's talk about that. So are you still practicing Mormon?
No. Okay. Right now I'm completely agnostic. Mm-hmm. It's one of those, like, I'm not atheistic. I still believe in God. I have kind of like crafted my own philosophy around that, and backed away from religion, kind of, because for some people it's a big subject, and other people, when you try to talk about it, it's a very sensitive subject. Religion for me is such a, like, I can't remove all the man-made aspects that are surrounding religion. And it's like, you know, I think most people could probably talk about it and see how many religions kind of like are fighting back and forth with each other over who's right, who's interpreting this, you know, the scriptures right, whatever.
Right.
And instead of all that, I kind of backed away and I was like, all right, what's the God that I believe in? Is he benevolent God? Is he the loving God, you know, or is he the fear engaging God or whatever? And I felt like no religion really covered that basis for me. So I removed myself from it completely.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I'm a Christian. That's one of the things I try to really stay away from is, you know, when it gets into the, I mean, cause that's the thing that's interesting about it is that you can't deny the man-made aspect of it. Like you just said, like, I mean, like, you know, words are of man, you know, churches, the structure is of man, and you can't deny the imprint that man had on it. Like, you know, if God created everything, he doesn't have a printing press. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And it's just like the when you get too far into the dogma of it, it's definitely a turnoff. And it's just like, and it's so hard to know what to believe and all that stuff. But agnostic means like you have doubts about what God is, correct?
It's a little bit of that. I always explain agnosticism a little more like, you know, I can't answer that.
Right.
Like. Atheists would say, I don't believe in a God. And they would tell you flat out. I've had people try to tell me that being agnostic means I'm just atheistic without the balls. But, you know, I don't believe that either, because I reject that aspect of like there is no God, that kind of belief.
Yeah.
And, you know, agnosticism kind of says like, I can't answer that. I'm not necessarily going to be worried about whether or not I can answer that. I'll take the beliefs that I want to believe. I'll have, you know, I still have many, when I talk to people about this, I still have many pillars from like Mormonism built into me. That's just part of my character. It's part of who I am, and shedding them, it would be impossible now. But, you know, agnosticism is me saying like, I'm not going to concern myself with, you know, Stephen Ignoramus over here. He's this Christian religion. He should be this Christian religion over here. He should be this denomination. So I'm going to try my damnedest to get him over to this denomination.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't burn in hell.
Yeah. That's very interesting. And it's also interesting how that there's a lot of marks of that in atheism. You know, when someone's an atheist and they're militant about it and just want to convert you, that kind of is a religion right there. It's like a godless religion where you're like, you have to think this and I will control you, you know?
I've always, like, that's how I've always felt about atheism itself. Like, if you're truly an atheist and you believe there's no God, what do you care if anybody else does? Well, like, why would you be out there about like, well, there is no God? Like, I've seen these people on Twitter, social media, or whatever, they jump on every post about that kind of thing to say there is no God, idiot. And I'm like, if it's that big of a deal, please tell me where you're not a religion trying to like recruit people at this point.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, cool. Thanks for your take. Yeah. So Joseph Smith was this. He started the Mormon Church, right? Am I thinking about the? Okay. And so I do a solo stream as well. And I talk about the things that happened today in history. And it just so happened that today is the day that Joseph Smith declared that God allowed polygamy. So I just talked about that on my stream hour ago, whatever. So it's just kind of a funny coincidence. So what other than like conversations with your family and stuff like that, were there any like books, speakers, or moments that kind of shaped your view about philosophy, history, like anything you remember growing up that really meant a lot?
Not specifically. Okay. Not from the growing up aspect. That came more like middle and high school, mm-hmm. branching out and checking it out. I tell people all the time, the thing that really taught me a lot about America and the beginning of America is the musical 1776. And I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No, I haven't. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. It was made in, I believe, 1976, but it was a Broadway musical about the signing of the Declaration of Independence, which sounds idiotic. It sounds ridiculous, and it is, but there's so much in that. Like they encompass so much of what went into the debate around it, how it wasn't just some easy thing where they were like, oh, hey, we're going to just declare independence and it's going to be cool. Like, we'll fight a war if we have to or whatever. It showed the struggle that they went through for it, especially when it came to finalizing things in the Declaration of Independence. But they also snuck in a lot of historical stuff, like Benjamin Franklin, all throughout this ridiculous movie, is actually saying Benjamin Franklin quotes. Like, they just ripped them from history and put them in there and have him say it. And the same thing, there's a passage when they're reading the Declaration of Independence, and they're really debating with the Southern colonies at this point over slavery. There's this whole passage that they read that Thomas Jefferson had written in the original document. And it goes into how they debated this and how the South walked out and how they had to kind of like compromise on, you know, we might have to strike this out because to start the nation, you got to start the nation.
Wow. So that's all a thing that I've always heard and kind of thought about history is that, you know, when they founded the country, they kind of kicked the slavery can down the road. And that's one of the reasons that 100 years later, the Civil War happened. Do you share that same view?
You know, I mean, that probably was a thing with it. I think the movie itself kind of encompasses it the right way, because there's a line in that movie where Ben Franklin and John Adams are literally arguing over this. And John Adams is 100% like, we can't let this go. We can't compromise on this. What will history think of us? And Franklin says something along the lines of, you know, it doesn't matter what history's going to think of us because we're going to be dead by then anyway. But what are they going to think we were anyway? Are they going to be thinking we were gods amongst men and could just get whatever we wanted?
Wow. That's powerful, man.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's one of those things where when people talk about this, it's real easy. I think it's really easy just to say, oh, it was a bunch of rich, white, racist men who owned slaves, which is true at the time. Yeah, it was a bunch of rich guys. It was a bunch of landowners. It was guys that had slaves. But we're looking at it through today's standards. We're looking at it through today's lenses rather than putting ourselves in that time period and going, how would we have resolved it then? And it's not as easy as just saying, well, we would have abolished slavery and it wouldn't have been a thing.
Wow.
Because it was a thing, you know, it was a thing. They had so much struggle over it, including laws that wouldn't allow them to free their slaves. So it builds this bigger picture of, you know, maybe this subject is a bit more complicated than we're making it.
Yeah. I mean, the more you learn about history, that seems to be the take on almost all issues, is that it's so complicated. I mean, like, the current events now are complicated. And, you know, in everything you just said, you actually, all those different camps are still represented today. Yeah. Every single one of them, that it's complicated camp. It's the rich white racist camp. There's the are we gods amongst men camp. You know, got the people that are like the fathers, and like all that stuff is still represented today. So, And like in 100 years for the people that are, you know, I wonder what they're going to be saying about Trump in 100 years. Like,
yeah, that's a great point to make it because, you know, I was actually earlier today, I was listening to, I want to say it was Glenn Beck's program from yesterday, and they were talking about the issue that just went down with Iran shooting down the unmanned drone. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Beck said something like that struck me as odd and weird. He was like, Trump is playing a game with them because he clearly doesn't, he's not a war hawk because he could have bombed them right then and there. And he was planning to, but he recalled them. Why did he recall them? And it painted this whole bigger picture that I was like, kind of like how you just said, there's so many different angles to this in trying to dissect what's going on and how it's going on that I'm interested in seeing how I'll look back on this time in, you know, 5 or 10 years.
Right. Yeah. And we'll see. Yeah, for sure. So what about like starting your podcast? You've been doing it for 4 years, you said, right?
Yeah. Since 2015, 2016.
Okay. Was it, and you do it completely solo, right? You don't do you have guests on at all? I listen to about 10 or 12 of your podcasts. Do you do any interviews or anything?
I haven't done interviews yet. Okay. It's something that I'm planning on integrating in, mm-hmm. Opening it up to guests. Possibly doing something live like this. I don't know. I've never done this before and this is going great so far. So
was it hard to like find your voice at first? I mean, that's what I struggled with when I was doing solo streams is the first like 10, I would just be like, and the news and so was it hard doing that at first?
I just last month I went back and listened to like my first episode ever. And it's a lot of me going, I sound like a freaking pilot. Like, we're experiencing some turbulence in the nation. And so, yeah, it was hard. And it's funny because growing up, I was such a shy, quiet, reserved kid that when I told people like, oh, hey, I'm starting a podcast, you should listen to it. They're like, you don't talk to anybody at all.
Wow.
Like they were like, what's your episode going to be? Like 40 minutes of silence? And I was like, I have a voice, damn it. I have opinions. But like growing up, I was so shy, so reserved. I remember turning on the microphone for my first podcast and I sat there and I kind of just like walked through it and got it up and went back and listened to it. And I was like, God, I got to work on some shit.
Yeah, that's it. That's interesting. I mean, it seems like everyone I talk to has a different like workflow and different level of awkwardness. But that's very surprising to hear that you're like shy and reserved, because that's one of the things I liked about it when I first heard it is like the sound of your voice and like your sense of humor. And you do some voices and stuff like that. I like that. You do pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good Bernie. I like that. And that's very interesting. And, you know, that you definitely. I don't know. You can't pay too much attention to the people you grow up with and your family and stuff like that. You just got to like do you. And it's very interesting, man. So like, did you have like a favorite episode or like a day, you know, like an episode where it like clicked and you're like, from this day forward, I got a lot better or anything like that?
I can't think of a specific episode. Okay. Honestly, how you said with the voices and stuff, excuse me, that year it was 2016. So we were in the 2016 election cycle.
Yeah.
There was 17 freaking Republican candidates debating. And so I sat down and I started talking about that. And I was going off of that. I was like, there's 17 of these freaking people up there talking nonsense. And I started incorporating the voices and things like that. I just, you know, I guess at that point you could say, I was just like, oh, fuck it. Let's just be stupid about it and see if it sticks.
Yeah, it's really funny how the it's essentially the Democrats are copying that version of the playbook this year from 2016.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Watching two freaking debates with 10 candidates each was mind numbing.
Yeah. So did you watch both of them?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. I live streamed during the second one and had three different people on my stream to like just talk about it and like comment on everything. And do you have any like main takeaways from it or any thoughts on them?
It was a clusterfuck. it was. And I think, I don't know if you listened to like one of the last episodes I did, but I literally talked about, like there's 20 of these people, 10 of them in each episode. And it's such a spectacle. Mm. Like when there's that many people, don't get me wrong. I like the voices being there. I like it being open and having a lot of different options. Right. But they have these 10 candidates, and like Lester Holt's looking down at a cue card, and he reads a question, and he looks at Elizabeth Warren, and he's like, Senator Warren. And she talks, and then he goes like to this next question. We didn't get the other 10 candidates. One of them's yelling at Warren for being stupid, you know?
Yeah.
And so like at the end of the day, I feel like you watch them, but how much do you actually, like how much substance do you actually take out of it?
Yeah.
You know,
not
I
much.
Mean like, yeah. Like one of the takeaways from this last one was what Beto O'Rourke talked in Spanish, and it went like left field with him and Julian Castro talking Spanish.
Yeah.
Which I felt left out. And I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. And it's I feel like the bar, that's one of the reasons that Trump won, is that the bar is so low that you basically just have to be as authentic as Trump to win. And Trump's not that authentic. I mean, but he's more authentic than most politicians going back years and years. And
yeah, authentic and blatant and
blatant. Yeah. That's a very, yeah. That's a much better word. Yeah. Yeah. Not really like genuine or authentic, but just like explicit and
yeah.
And not polished. So it's like the anti-hero type thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can see where that fits with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you, I don't know, do you, so are you, what type of libertarian are you? Like I saw in your, it says libertarian-ish. Are you a member of the LP? Are you not just independent, or where do you stack up there?
I'm registered here in Delaware as a voter.
Okay.
Under libertarian.
Yep.
As far as like a party player, I take it more as a philosophy. I hate parties, period. Democrats, Republicans, libertarians, because we're not libertarian enough for each other. That's our,
yeah,
that's our big,
that's
struggle
thing. Yeah.
Our big struggle on the internet. I know you interviewed a buddy of mine, Brian Nichols,
right?
Like, yeah. A while ago.
Mm-hmm.
He hates me right now because I can't pronounce John McAfee's name right. I did this whole episode. I was talking about John, and I used to say it McAfee.
Okay.
McAfee.
Yeah.
And he messaged me in the middle of listening to that episode, and he said, I might have to like kick you off of my friends list. And I was like, for what? And he goes, it's not McAfee, it's McAfee.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this where we're going with this? Is this my big like libertarian sellout moment that we all figured out I was just faking it and I'm not really a libertarian at all?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the most fascinating things about like this modern political time we live in, is there's all of these characters that are popping up from like media and stuff from the 90s. Like when I heard about Trump announcing, I'm like the real estate guy, and like something, yep, like Scott Adams, I'm like the cartoon guy, and like John McAfee is like, I'm like the antivirus guy. Like,
yeah, what, the
like,
guy?
Yeah, it's like what? And he's I don't know. He, do you think he's nuts? Do you think he's playing a character, McAfee? I mean, he's like on the run, has like hits out on him, and has like hundreds of guns, and like, what do you think about him?
McAfee is batshit insane.
Yeah.
And that's how he lives his life. And right, that's why everybody respects him. Because how many people can do cocaine and then do a live stream on Twitter?
Right.
You know, from his boat where he is in international water somewhere trying to escape the United States government while trying to run for president.
Yeah, I mean, it's just insane. I mean, so do you have like if you were to vote today, who would you vote for president, and like why? It's
that's
tough, right?
Tough,
yeah,
question.
Yeah.
I mean, as of right now, Justin Amash hasn't announced he's
right.
Running.
Exactly.
If he was, I told people in a heartbeat, I would just vote for Justin Amash. Why? Mm. Because he's genuine. He's always explained his stances. He's always been that constitutional guy. Like, he's not fake.
Mm.
Outright. I do not believe he's fake. I believe that he's committed. I believe that he's kind of, you know, the no-nonsense type of thing. He's not going to toe a party line. Mm. And that's why I would vote for him. Out and out. Out of the current batch, I might just sit back and watch.
Mm.
I might not even vote.
Interesting. I mean, so if Amash, if he declares for presidency, do you think that he is going to, like, I don't think that he could take enough, like, what's the, how much does a libertarian need to get into the debates? If you need to get like a third party into the national debates, don't you need a certain level of polling or funding,
yes,
or something like that?
I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, 'cause that was such a big subject. in 2016 for right. like the entire podcast. I want to say it's like 15% polling.
You have to get that's
15%
big.
In the nationals. And it's not just like one poll either. It's like three that they do it off of.
Mm.
So you have to get like this 15% threshold. It's not easy.
Yeah, that's a big amount. So do you see him taking more votes out of Trump or out of and assuming Trump gets the nomination, there's no reason to think he won't. Do you think him taking more votes out of the left or out of the right?
At this point, I could probably see a lot of people who are Republican who would reluctantly vote for Trump.
Yeah.
And probably, I'm not going to say they reluctantly voted for Trump in 2016, because when it was Hillary and Trump, people probably held their nose and voted for Trump just to not vote for Hillary. Would they do that this time? You know, there's some people who probably held their nose a bit too long and they're like, all right, I'm done. This is kind of nonsensical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to vote for this guy. He could probably take some pull from there. He would definitely take some pull of, I think, centrist Democrats, like, mm-hmm. you know, more center. He's not going to take any progressives with him.
Right.
Like that's a losing battle. Like, you're not going to appeal to that. That's the extreme left wing versus the extreme right wing.
Right. It seems like that's, he's not going to pull any like far left progressives or like MAGA people, you know.
Nah.
they're set in their ways. And
nah, yeah. And those are such on the outskirts of the voting, you know, realm anyway,
because,
you know, you're not, you know, if you're a Democrat, you're not going to appeal to a MAGA.
Yeah.
And if you're a MAGA, you know, you're not going to appeal to people who follow Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Twitter.
Right. Yeah. So one of the things I like asking to people, like liberty people, libertarians that come on is like, you know, it seems, you know, trying to make government smaller through the presidency seems like, I don't know, like it's self-defeating. Like, you're trying to get the big daddy upstairs to make government smaller.
The way that I've likened it is that thanks to media and movies now, the way I've likened it is that like all these libertarians think that this is the infinity gauntlet, that you can just grab the glove and you have all the stones and your guys in office and bam,
yeah,
the nation will change overnight. You're ridiculous if you think that. I mean, that's not going to happen.
So what is the way to do it? Just get more into local, you know, more federalism. Like, what's the way to actually shrink the size of the federal government?
I think it's a multifaceted approach.
Okay.
You know, you definitely want to start with local, because so many people get into this and they don't focus on what's happening in their own backyard.
Mm.
They keep looking at the grand prize, the national prize. And if you don't know what your government's doing for you and your state at that small level, and you can go even a step further than just your state, you can go your county or your town or whatever. If you don't know what they're doing for you and you kind of don't care, you're contributing to that overall federal problem of this massive big government that's involved in everything. So you definitely, like, the libertarian approach of being hyper focused on the presidency and trying to top down it is wrong. You build up smaller movements, you win the smaller battles, and then that's how you get to the big leagues.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then it seems like that thinking is, you know, what got us into the problem in the first place. It's just like, you know, it's got to come from on high. And you know, libertarians are smart enough to not like admit this. They don't say it's got to come from on high, but it is so easy. It's like, oh, who's going to be president? Who's going to be Speaker of the House? And it's a little circular, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's one of the things that I like. I mean, like I said, I live in Washington, D.C., and it's hard to not think that way here. I mean, we basically just have two governments. We got the city, and then we got the Congress, which basically the city can't do much without the Congress. The Congress like sets our budget, and it's basically you can think locally or you think federally here. There's not really like a state thing here. I mean, a lot of people push for it, but I don't know. It's just interesting to think about, because without shrinking the size of the federal government, it's a bleak, kind of a bleak future with the debt and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just increasingly like the monster becomes bigger, progressively bigger.
Right. So, you know, back to history a little bit. Do you know, one of the things that you talk about a lot on your podcast is just like individual rights, unalienable rights. I thought it was inalienable a year ago. I know that a lot of people get that wrong, but unalienable.
It can be either one.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
And that's actually, that comes from 1776, the musical as well.
Yeah, there was like a debate over that. Yeah, it was like there was some speech back in the day, right? That they they made fun of each other or something like that.
Yeah, they did. They like it was you know, circa 1700s trolling. That's what it was.
So do you see a time in history that individual rights started becoming less and less? Was it just all gradual? Do you see like a 25-30 year period when it started getting like more, I don't know, collectivist, for lack of a better word?
Everything I think is a slow progression. You know, and that's another thing, I guess, going back talking to can libertarians really win the presidency and just snap everything back to where it should be? We progressed to this point. It was slow. It was methodical in some senses. And to go back, you have to take slow, methodic steps back, you know? And in talking about that too, I mean, some people are like, I guess this blends into that whole Colin Kaepernick argument, like the Betsy Ross flag thing, like, oh, you're recalling a time of slavery in America. So if you have that flag, clearly you're a racist and you want African Americans in chains again. And it's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, why is the government so massive at this point that it controls your retirement account and it controls all these other aspects of your life? And people are clamoring for it to control more aspects of your life.
Do you feel there's a time in American history where, you know, like, nothing's perfect, there's no such thing as utopia, and but is there like a small segment of American history where you think we got it the most right?
That's a good question, and I think it's hard to answer that one because you can't shed off any of the past that was wrong,
right?
And you know, you can't correct that. So, you know, when everybody asks, I'm like, you know, the Calvin Coolidge era.
That's what I get the most. Yeah.
Like, and he's like, honestly, in high school class, that was like the most boring segment of history ever. They're like, Coolidge did nothing. And I was like, sounds perfect.
Yeah.
You know, but that era, I guess, because that was right before World War II and FDR and New Deals and all that jazz. You know, World War II kind of kicked that up with FDR and the New Deal and the government having even more involvement because of the Great Depression and trying to recover from it.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, that's what I hear most from libertarians. I haven't really looked into Coolidge that much, other than I do remember that from history class, that it's like it was just boring. And
yeah.
I don't know. There's something about being young where you're like, oh, the person that did the action is the best. So FDR is the best. You know?
You probably hear, like, Coolidge has a really awesome quote about taxes. And his quote is like, I can't do it verbatim, but it's something along the lines of any tax that goes above just the general welfare of the people, anything that goes above and beyond that is theft. Like, that's when he doesn't say theft. He says legalized larceny. Anything that goes beyond just the basics.
Gotcha.
And that's probably why you hear libertarians like love Coolidge so much.
Right. Do you believe that taxation is theft? Like, that often, you know,
I mean, that's such a weird, like, I started that way a couple years ago.
Okay.
I started that way a couple years ago. I was like, yeah, taxation is theft. I mean, you know, stupid government, right? Like, that's how it comes off when you say taxation is theft. I've kind of backtracked myself to more the Coolidge line of, if we have taxes, we should heavily scrutinize what they're going towards, definitely checking the efficiency of them. But even in that discussion, like, outright income tax, in my eyes, is theft. Like, your income should be your income, period.
Right.
the government isn't entitled to a percentage of it just because somebody banged a gavel and said, yeah, he's going to be fine with 10% or 20% or 30% less of his paycheck. And it's all for the greater good because it's going to this stuff over here.
Right. And yeah, that's one of the that's kind of the same, you know, up the same alley. It's just like, we don't get to choose where our shit goes.
No.
And it's like, that seems to be more wrong than taking it or whatever. I mean, you know, we don't get, it's like, it's one thing if you're like, you know, you have to give this to me. And then I'm like, can I pick where it goes, please?
Yeah. Can I like say that, I like police and firefighters and EMTs. I want the brunt of my money to go there. Or I like the education system. I like teachers. I want more of my money to go there. But you don't have that option. The government just takes it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the things I've talked about on my stream for a while is that, do you think there's ever going to be a day when, like, even just like not even like being able to choose where your dollars go? Well, I guess the first, like the most free thing would be them not taking it. The next would be choosing where it goes. Then the next one would be just seeing where it goes. And that, I call that just opening the books. And it feels like, you know, on the road to no taxes or, you know, proper amount of taxes, just being able to like open the books and see where it all goes. We don't even know that because it's all based on debt. And
yeah.
Do you think there's a chance of that ever happening? If it, you know, the debt is, I don't know what's ever going to happen with that. It's going to end badly.
I don't know about if it happens in our lifetime or not.
Right. Yeah.
Like there's always that question of will it happen or will like what you hear other people like collapsitarians, I guess, say like, oh, the great collapse will come and then we're all just going to be screwed anyway. I don't know which is which. Like the debt situation is so passed off. And part of that is, I think, is we have such a debt society. Like everybody's kind of been, you get reared from school into this debt society. They tell you to go to college, take out, you know, fill out your FAFSA because the government's going to give you money and you can worry about paying it back later. Sounds great, doesn't it? Not so much when your debt amount doesn't even match your yearly salary amount.
Have you ever dabbled in like anarchism, ANCAP, anything like that? Or, you know,
that stuff that like I'm more and more researching and figuring out what it's about, because, you know, at first I was one of those people who was like, anarchy, you can't have anarchy in the streets. Everybody will die. And then I sat back and I said, that's exactly what politicians say. They say everybody will die if we, you know, go off this track. So ANCAPs and volunteerism and things like that, like I'm starting to research more. I'm starting to dabble in them a little bit more. Don't know everything about them, but they're interesting topics, and they're I'm more open to them now because I've talked to a lot of these anarchy type of people on Twitter, and they're not like burn the world.
No,
and I'm like, I thought you guys were like fuck everything.
Yeah,
but apparently you're not.
Yeah, most ANCAPs I've talked to are like people need guns and a vegetable farm. Like that's mostly the ANCAPs I've talked to. Like, it's just like, if we can just self-sustain and do things ourselves, then we can bypass the government. And then, you know, and I interviewed like Pete Raymond, Mance Rayder on the program. That was cool. And, you know, a year ago, 6 months ago, I was a total ANCAP, and maybe I've gone, you know, more towards government at this point. But as long, you know, what I say is, as long as you are open about that, you want to shrink the size of government, then I'll get along really well with you, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like right now I probably classify myself as in minarchy, the night watchman, you know?
Yeah, me too. That's probably what I am too. A little bit of federalism, a little bit of states' rights, you know?
Yeah.
Minarchist, yeah.
That feels like it's a good balance.
Yeah, like private property, you know, individual rights, yeah.
Yeah, and then it comes to the question of how is it getting enforced. So that's what backs me away from the anarchy thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, guns in a vegetable farm, that's great. I don't want to have to be shooting up people.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'm not really into that. Yeah. So, you know, we have about 15 minutes left or so, and I want to ask you about one of your episodes, the one called Mock a Politician.
Yeah.
And then, so we had the whole, you know, we got the whole immigration shit going on right now. And, you know, there was the private Facebook group where, you know, the Border Patrol agents were, you know, putting memes up about AOC. All that stuff. And then Frederica Wilson got on mic and said that And I think that she's like clarified her statement since then. But her on mic that day was like, if you're mocking a politician, you should be prosecuted.
Yeah, her whole speech was like, you're not allowed to go online and mock politicians. And I'm like, whoa, remember how we're all talking about fascism right there?
Yeah.
Fascism.
Absolutely. Yeah. So why don't you I don't know if you can just expound on your take a little bit about that. Was a really good episode. And, you basically, I think you put out a bunch of tweets after that, like a daily call to go out and mock a politician. So why don't you?
I did put out a daily call, and I think in every one of them, I tagged Frederica Wilson's account. And I was tempting fate. I was like, I hope they suspend me for this shit. Like, I really wanted to, but hopefully she has clarified her statement. And even after she said it, I was like, she didn't mean that.
You can't.
She did not mean that. She was just in the moment and talking and didn't realize that what she said was completely stupid.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, she can't mean that. But on the other hand, there have been plenty of politicians in history that did mean that. And, we're talking about Stalin at this point, like people that would just kill dissenters. So it's definitely possible,
It's 2019. I'm not taking my chances anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So
if we have crazy man Trump and everybody's going to yell and scream every time he opens his mouth, then when I hear one of the more progressive politicians say something like that, even if they misspoke, I'm going to be like, all right, well, we're at least all doubling down that we don't want this, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that goes back to history and stuff like that. If you know the precedent behind, when people, you can use history as a bad thing too. If people are just like, blame them, blame them, blame them, that's not good. But if it's like, look at what happened, here we are, that's a good use of history because, how all these things can play out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I don't know. When I saw that speech, I kind of thought the same thing. I was just like, she can't mean that, but she openly said it.
And yeah, I went back and I was watching because I was like, there's got to be some context before this or something that completely changes the picture of it. But it was just that comment. And I was like, no way.
Do you, is there a Democrat that you do like that you would, whether, for president or senator or anything, is there, because that's one of the I'm not really Republican, I'm just an independent, but I'm mostly libertarian, but these Democrats, I feel I could, there's not any, maybe Tulsi Gabbard because she's anti-foreign war. I don't mind Andrew Yang because he's got ideas, but he's not really a Democrat because he's not even a politician. But anyone that you like?
Andrew Yang has that likability about him. And that ability to say, he said it multiple times. He's even said oh, I'll reach out to libertarians. So I already know he's inclusive. He's he's looking at this, we're all in this together. So let's all get a little bit from here, a little bit from here and make it work. Tulsi Gabbard, I like, if it looks like shit's really about to hit the fan and there's going to be some international big conflict, she's probably the one I'm siding on because she's not going to just be trigger happy. And then outside of that, it's really hard, but I think when I was talking about the Democratic debates or whatever, I like Pete Buttigieg, and I'm probably saying the name wrong, but it's really fun to say Buttigieg.
10 out of 10.
Yeah. 10 out of 10. I liked him. Because when he was talking, you have Bernie Sanders up there. I want Medicaid for all. Medicare for all. I just want to control your health care. And so he does the Medicare for all thing. But Pete Buttigieg stood up there and he said, hey, there's millions of Americans that have private insurance that have clearly stated they don't want that taken away from them. So why not do Medicare for those who want it? And that was an interesting spin that made me go, I can maybe kind of like you because you'll start it and you'll let the people who want to participate and you're not going to just zonk my healthcare away.
Yeah. And another thing about Buttigieg, is it Buttigieg? I don't know. Anyway, Buttigieg.
Buttigieg. That's what I think it is.
Over enunciated as well. Buttigieg. Yep. Yeah. So he also is one of the first politicians in a debate that I've seen that was, he answered a question with, I messed up. they're asking him about that, like, shooting that happened in South Bend, and it was something about not employing enough cops of color, which right there I'm just like, man, like, does it matter what skin color someone is at a job? I'm just like, man. But he's like, I couldn't get it done. And I was like, I almost fainted. I was just like, you answer a question with that. Well, even if, like, the outcome is not what I really care about, but it was just like, dang. Like,
So, like, maybe just an injection of honesty in it. Yeah.
Even if it's fake. Even if it's fake, just saying that you made a mistake, like, making a mistake is an answer to a question.
And I made a mistake.
Yeah.
All right. I made a mistake, and we never get that out of our politicians.
Yeah. So why don't we talk for the last couple of minutes about what you do for a living? So it says on your site that you're in law enforcement, and I think you've said corrections before, but I don't know how much you can get into it, but what exactly do you do?
Yeah, I'm a lieutenant in a Department of Corrections. We'll leave it at that.
Okay, cool.
For description wise, but I've been doing that for 7 years now.
Wow. So how'd you get into that? Did you go to school for it, or like, how does one get into that field?
I didn't go into school for it. The last job I was working, I had worked at a retirement community in a dining services for 5 years. And I pretty much hit the glass ceiling. I went as far as I could go. I was making as much money there as I could. I hadn't gone to school yet. I hadn't made those big decisions. And, you were sitting there, and I was looking at my lifestyle, and I was looking at, I need to make more money. How can I make more money? And honestly, this is the weirdest thing. My mother was like, hey, have you filled out an app for the Department of Corrections? And I kind of looked at her like, pardon? Like, what? You want me to go? You want me to go? Most parents don't want their kids to go to prison. You're suggesting that I voluntarily go. Like, what is that about? And, she listed off all the good things, like, hey, it's a good steady job. They're always hiring people. You'll have a steady paycheck. The health benefits that they have right now are great. So she was like, it'll be a trifecta for you. You'll have a big pay, you'll have your paycheck, you'll have your health care, you'll have a steady job. You don't have to stay there forever. And so I was like, all right, I'll take a flyer on that. And I went through the academy. Graduated, walked into the prison the first day, looked around, and I was like, what the hell am I getting into? Because when you walk into a prison, the door's shut behind you, it's loud clanking, it's a bunch of dudes. You're clearly outnumbered every step of the way.
Wow.
For real. You're outnumbered. You walk onto a housing unit with 60 inmates, and it's you and your partner. And it's like, don't let anything chaotic happen.
Wow.
So, it's crazy. And when I got into it, I was convinced. I was like, I'm not going to be here long. I'll stay here for like maybe 2-3 years, get my bills straight, won't have any debt, and I'll go work somewhere else, or I'll do college while I'm here and I'll work somewhere else. Then I worked up 3 ranks to where I'm at now. And, funny thing about it too, when I went into that job, I wasn't really into this, I wasn't into this podcasting thing. I wasn't into this politics thing. That job made me get into it. Working for the government made me a libertarian. And that's something that there's a lot of hardcore libertarians who figure out you work for the state and they're like, you're a hypocrite because your paycheck comes from tax dollars and all that crap. And you help support the messed up criminal justice system and all that. And I'm like, all right, listen, I get it. Like, the criminal justice system is messed up. You know what brought light to my eyes for that? Working it. That's where I figured out, because I'm in the thick of it. I'm in a place where prisons don't get publicity. Nobody knows what happens in a prison except for people who are locked up, people who have family members who are locked up, or people who have people who work in prison. And that's it. So that opened up my eyes really wide to this whole thing, where that turned me into a criminal justice reform guy working in a prison. Cause I'm like, half of these people don't even need to be here. Mm. Like, they really don't. Like, if they're here for drug usage alone, what the hell are they doing in this building? Because we don't, our means inside of a prison for drug rehabilitation and things like that, it's not very good. It's not very good, especially not when you're overcrowding it with people who are in there for theft, people who are in there for rape, people who are in there for murder, people who are in there who are child molesters. You have this whole big ball of crap. And some of it is even basic crap, like guys not paying their child support payment, mm-hmm. but they're locked up because of it. And you're like, how much money are we wasting on this dude who's not, you know, he's just, for lack of better terms, let's just say he's not paying his child support payments, so he's a bum, you know? Mm. And we're locking him up in here at $30,000 a year to house him here when he couldn't make his child support payments. His mother or his baby's mother is still getting child support payments from the government. So it's like a double hitter. She's still getting paid out benefits. He's not paying benefits. And he's costing $30,000 to sit in this building on a sentence for that. Why?
Wow. Laws and sausages. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, you see so much of it, and it's so odd that the system keeps running that way. Like, I've heard people talk about that, you know, prison industrial complex yep. thing. And I'm sitting here, I sit at my job every day and I think about these numbers and I'm like, how do people make money off of this? Like, especially when people talk about like privatized prisons and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't understand how a privatized prison runs. I really don't. I don't know how you run off of a for-profit model for this stuff, because I only see expenses with it.
Mm. So do you think that there should be private prisons, or do you think that only public is the right call there?
This is where I probably butt heads with libertarians more often than not. Okay. Because, you know, since I'm in the industry, I've read up a lot and I've looked up a lot of cases on privatized prisons, mm-hmm. and the accountability for those places is like out the window. It's mm-hmm. not really there. Whereas, you know, working for a state run or a government run Department of Corrections, like it might suck for how the criminal justice system is. And I push for those reforms all the time. You know, I'm right there in the front of line with you guys wanting to change a lot of that stuff. But if it's not the government doing it, like I've read so many cases of private prisons abusing rights and it going by the wayside, them being understaffed and all of that. To me, that's where you could say the minarchy aspect of me, like the government should be running that. That mm. should be the concern of the government, because the accountability will be there. Mm. Like in my facility, there's cameras everywhere. So if anybody's out there like, oh, that dude beats up inmates all the time, I don't have a place where I could beat them up. I'm on camera 24/7 in that building.
Yeah. That's one of the things that, kind of got me into libertarianism is like just looking at, like, we take the monopoly on force for granted, and like the state is the only ones that are legally allowed to use force to kind of enact their will when not provoked. And once I was like, dang, I took that for granted forever. And, you know,
yeah.
That's where I agree with you on the no privatized prisons, because it's just like, you know, if the state's the one that is allowed to use force, then it, you know, anything that is like violent, forceful, and puts people in a box, it should be on the state. Now, wanting to get rid of that, now we're talking about anarchy, and we can yeah. have that conversation. But it seems like you kind of agree, and then I didn't know that wanting privatized prisons was a libertarian thing, really.
It's a very hot debated subject because of the different things that play into it. I mean, you know, I'm telling you right now, I would never work for a privatized prison ever, because I know the amount of protection that I have where I'm at, you know, from the state itself. That's all on me. If I screw up, it's my job to lose. If I do the wrong thing, you know, my job isn't hard. It's not hard in the sense of what has to be done, you know, what has to be documented and all that. It's not hard in that aspect. Is it hard dealing with overcrowding? Hell yeah. Understaffing? You betcha. Budgets? Sure. But it's not hard in the sense of what needs to be done. And that is, most people who are working in there are like me. We go in there, we want to have a smooth day, we're crossing our fingers for it. Doesn't always happen. But we want to make sure that everything's done safely and by the book. Safety is the big key thing. We don't want anything breaching the safety or the security.
Do you have you ever had any like I don't know, dust ups or bad days or things that you can share, or like things that made you really scared or anything like that?
I mean, like, you know, I can't go into too much detail about stuff. Like in my 7 years, I've maybe used force twice.
Okay.
Wow. You know, and that was pepper spray. Okay. And that was breaking up two guys fighting each other.
Okay.
You know, both times.
Wow.
You know, the other thing, if I had to say another aspect about it, and it's probably something that people don't realize a lot because, again, it's not heavily focused on, a lot of the prisons are overcrowded with severe mental, you know, illness in people because state hospitals are shutting down. And then they take those people who have criminal charges and all that because they're violent and things of that nature. They send them to our prison, which, you know, the prison environment isn't good for somebody that is off their rocker. Mm. It's not. And they just dump them into the correctional systems and they say, hey guys, figure out how to deal with it. You guys have mental health departments. Good luck. And you can't deal with those people the same way that you deal with somebody just, you know, for lack of a better term, being an asshole. Mm. You know, somebody who has mental illnesses that cause them to not be in control of their own actions, and here they are locked up in a correctional system. Like it's horrific that it's even come to that. But state hospitals shut down, they get sent off to prisons, people don't really know about it because it's not in the forefront, you know.
Wow, interesting. Is it true that that like you have to pay for your own prison, like people that are locked up, they have to pay for it like after they get out? Or I've heard that about like county jail before, but
That would be so, you would have to break that down because it's different everywhere. The other thing about the whole criminal justice system is that it's literally different everywhere.
Yeah.
Like here it's different. It's different from in Washington. It's different from in Texas.
Yeah.
So I've heard of prisons where you pay for your stay, so to speak.
That's rough.
Yeah. And again, don't get it. Don't understand how that works, but, you know, the facilities that I work in, that's not a thing.
Cool. All right. Yeah. That's about all the time we got. Why don't you tell people where they can find your podcast? I mean, all of it's linked to, below as well, but tell people where they can find you and where they can listen.
Yeah, it's all linked below, but pretty much any podcasting platform, you can probably find me just by searching Fritzcast. Definitely on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, I think, is another one. I got a Facebook page, facebook.com/thefritzcast. Don't forget the part.
The Fritzcast. Okay.
Gotcha. The Fritzcast. And then Twitter is probably like my primary social media platform that I operate off of. So that's at FritzQS. And then I run things like my database blog, which is fritzcastdatabase.com, where I blog about how I'm becoming a parent and all the quirky stuff that I run into for that.
Cool. All right. That's awesome. Good talking to you today, man. It was cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me, man.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for checking out Call Me Ignorant today, and also the ones that check us out after today. You can find this uploaded to YouTube, BitChute, and FreedomScoop.com as a video, and Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean as a podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at IgnoramusSteve. Send me an email at StephenIgnoramus@gmail.com. If you feel like you've benefited from the show and want to support, you can donate via DLive, PayPal, or Streamlabs. Sign up with a monthly pledge on BitBacker, subscribe, star, or Patreon. All of that is linked below in the show description. I hope everyone out there enjoyed the show. My guest today was Fritz of the Fritzcast. You can find his information linked below in the show description. Have a fantastic day. Go inform yourselves.